Hello there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 here with the wonderful Barry Dorans, and I use that term very loosely.
Yes.
And we are going to be going, this is sort of a two-parter series on learning about how to do authentication, but mostly authorization.
Mostly authorization. It's pretty much all authorization. The authentication thing is just off
there to was the side. There was a blurb for about a minute, but that was about it. But now we're going to get into some more complicated policies following up from the video we saw before.
Yep.
All right, cool.
So we're going to talk about drinking.
Oh, let's do it.
Because, you know, that's what we did before the video started.
Of course.
It's the only way you get me
on camera. Yeah, it's how we get through it.
So, the drinking age in America is entirely uncivilized and is 21.
Is that, what's a good age?
18.
Okay.
18 is the UK drinking age.
Got
but,
it.
Of course, growing up in Northern Ireland, it was like 16.
Right.
You just go down the pub and sneak in the back door.
You put it in the bottles, too, in Ireland. Is that not?
That's true. I was brought up drinking Guinness instead of milk.
Nice.
Yeah.
Explains a lot.
It does.
Okay.
So, we talked about how we could just authorize based on people's role membership or on the value of a claim, but neither of those are really useful.
And what's sad is that's what we were kind of saddled with before.
Correct.
Not even claims. It was mostly roles.
Always roles.
Unless you did some kind of your own identity and iPrinciple.
Yep. And then you had to write your own authorization attribute implementation, and that was usually horrible.
Yeah.
And we don't want you to do that anymore. We would like you to use our brand new policies.
Cool.
So, a policy is made up of one or more requirements.
Okay.
And requirements can be expressed in code. So we're going to take our can I drink requirement,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to implement that. And normally, you know, what happens is when you go to a bar, the barman will look at your driver's license, obviously not yours because everyone assumes you're over 18. With my face, though, I get carded a lot.
I don't get carded almost hardly ever because I look like I'm 65.
Yes. And you look like an alcoholic as well. You look like a belligerent drunk.
I would be a sloppy drunk.
Okay.
If I was one. But I don't even drink at all.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine this guy drunk? It'd be horrid.
I then have no real excuse for your behavior.
There is none.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we are going to add a date of birth claim. So I've got to cut and paste it in because, as we've seen in the previous video, I cannot type.
And so the claims are the things that are going to...
I'm cutting and pasting the wrong darn thing.
Nice. So the claims are the things that are actually in the cookie, or they're sort of...
Claims are something about the identity.
Okay.
It could be the user's name. It could be their address. It could be their email. It could be their date of birth.
But is it stored in the cookie?
It can be, yes.
And the reason why I ask...
For our demonstration purposes, they get written to a cookie.
So the reason why I ask this is because... We don't want people, like, remember Session State a long time ago? People were dumping data tables in there?
Don't do that.
And claims, don't put a lot of stuff in the claims, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, so we put things in cookies because cookies are easy across web farms.
Sure.
Because everybody understands them. But you need to synchronize your encryption keys.
So for the getting back to the claims, you don't want to stuff everything into it.
No, you don't have to.
What are some examples of the kinds of things that are stored in there that are okay, and maybe some examples of things that you probably shouldn't?
Well, we have first name, we have last name, we have, you know, our date of birth, an email claim, but you probably wouldn't want to put a user's entire employment history in there because it's just too big, and
right.
the cookie would overflow.
Sure.
So there are other ways to do that. You would probably create what's called a reference cookie, and you would have a single claim in there, which is like a user identity. And then you can hook into a claims transformation point, which we won't be demonstrating because I did not prepare for this because he's just sprung it on me.
No, sorry.
And that claims transformation code runs with every request, and you could go to your backend database and look things up.
Cool. Okay.
However.
That was just an aside, as I got all curious about
what
you can put
in. Confusing aside.
Yeah.
I had this whole smooth demo, and you've thrown me off.
We're totally off the rails.
Yep.
So we added the claim.
Yep. We have a date of birth claim. And we have a date of we have the date in a sensible format.
Is that when you were really born? Holy
That's
cow.
When I was really born.
Dang.
I am that old. I will be 46 this year. Hey, look, you can all see my birthday, so.
Nice.
Yeah, birthday tweets.
Oh,
whatever.
My goodness.
So I am far older than you.
You were a little bit old, and only 9 years, dude. I'm not that old.
But I have so much more gray hair.
That's true.
But I also have so much hair.
That's true. Oh yeah, mine is starting to go away. My wife's telling me to rub oils on my head. It's
wow.
It's
I
pretty.
Think it's far beyond the oil rescuing stage.
I might have to go John Papa, eventually.
Yeah, so just shiver. Oh. So, we want to have a requirement that says the user must be over 21.
Okay.
And we want to parameterize that requirement so we can use the same requirement in Europe, where it's 18. Or 16, or 14, or whatever the heck else.
So now we have to make this policy. Where does that actually go?
So we've got the we're gonna create a policy, and we're going to create a requirement.
Okay.
So you have to remember that the way that everything works is we have a requirement, and a policy may have one or more requirements
got
in it. So we have a requirement, and then we have to write the code to figure out whether the requirement has been successful or not. So we have a requirement and a requirements handler.
Okay.
They're separate. The requirement is just a class that may or may not contain data. In this case, because we want to write a parameterized requirement, it's just going to hold the minimum age.
Okay.
And then the handler will look at the requirement, it will pull out that minimum age, it will take the date of birth, it will calculate the user's age, and then if they meet the requirement, it will succeed.
Got it.
And lo and behold, someone will be able to drink.
Or at least purchase a drink.
Or purchase a drink. No. Okay, so again, we're going to cut and paste, and I'm going to create minimum age requirement, and I'm actually going to mix the two together. Oh, look at that. I had forgotten that I had closed my Solution Explorer. There we go, because I don't know the shortcut keys. I'm going to create a new class. And I'm going to cut and paste it in, basically.
So where does that class actually live? Does it really matter?
No, wherever you want.
Okay.
Personally, I stick everything underneath, you know, in a requirements folder or an authorization folder.
Got it.
But for just for the purposes of this, I will...
I mean, it could literally be in a separate assembly.
Yes. Oh, it certainly can. So you can ship requirements and requirements handlers in NuGet packages, so you can share them between multiple applications. So... let's just get the namespaces to come in. So here we have iAuthorization requirement. This is what we need to implement to be a requirement in our class. And this does nothing. It is a marker interface.
I see.
Nothing more. And basically, here we are taking our minimum age, and I'm going to store it. And then we need to write a handler for the requirement. So we're combining. We have authorization handler, and it takes the type of the requirement it can figure out.
So typically, would these be in separate classes? Or
typically,
would you
they are in separate classes, because if you have them in separate classes, the authorization handler gets registered with the DI system that is baked into ASP.NET. So then you can inject things like your user repository or a documents repository and get really complicated. You could just pull extra information in. And we'll come on to that in a little bit.
So I'm having a hard time distinguishing between the iAuthorization requirement, what should go in there. I understand that the handler should say, is this satisfied or not?
Correct. And the authorization requirement takes in any data that is not linked to the identity that might be used. So for our minimum age requirement, it's taking in the minimum age.
Got it.
Nothing more.
Okay.
So when we implement an authorization handler, we must implement the handle class. And this takes in a context and an instance of the requirement that it's going to fulfill.
Got it.
And what I'm doing is I'm going to look to see if the user has a date of birth claim. If they don't, I'm going to exit. If they do have a date of birth claim, I'm going to do some maths. And then if their age is greater than or equal to the minimum age, I'm going to call succeed on the requirement because I have successfully fulfilled the requirement.
That's interesting because I saw the signature and I was confused because I was expecting like a true or a false. Is there more than one thing that you can do with the context? Can you succeed halfway, or
there is there are basically three things you can do. You can exit because you can't fulfill it. You don't have enough information. You can succeed, and then you can fail. And what fail is there for is for situations where, like, oh my goodness, my entire user database has just gone offline. And even if other requirements succeed, I need to fail the entire policy.
Oh, so fail is just saying...
Bail. Fail no matter what happens.
Okay. And so there's succeed, which says we're good. There's fail, which says, okay, we need to drop the ships and get off the boat.
Or there's just a straightforward return, because this is just a void.
Uh-huh.
Straightforward return, which means I don't know what to do with this. Maybe someone else can handle it. And I'll come on to examples of multiple ways to succeed a requirement in a little bit.
Okay, cool.
So basically, you don't want to call fail very often. Okay. That is for truly horrific scenarios.
Got it.
So here we have our minimum age requirement. Nice and simple. And we're going to save that because we want to have our date of birth. And then we go back to the lab and we're going to set an over 21 policy. So we're back to setting up policies, and you can see that policy name, and I'm going to start adding individual requirements to the policy. And I'm going to new up a minimum age requirement, and I'm going to say you must be over 21.
And that's cool because the requirement has, so here's, what are we actually adding? Are we adding the I requirement? I don't remember.
We are adding an instance of, yes, an I authorization requirement.
Okay.
In this case, it's our minimum age requirement.
And so where does the handler come in?
I will show you.
Oh, see? Okay, good.
So this is a very simple example where we have the handler and the requirement as one, so DI knows what to do with it.
Okay.
But we'll come on to more complicated examples in a bit. So if I go back to my home controller, and we'll just, you know what, we'll delete all the ones that make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this will now look for our over 21 policy, and our over 21 policy has a single requirement, which is our minimum age requirement,
mm-hmm.
and it's passed in a parameter of 21. So if I run this, we should hopefully get our hello Barry.
I thought it was way too fast that first time. It was from the last run. There you go.
There we go. So if I close all of this, and then I change the date of birth claim, so, you know, they were born this year, so they should obviously not be drinking, because you don't
give. That's born in the future.
Oh, that's true. We can't do that.
I guess it would still...
It would still work. It would
still work, yeah.
I don't know if my code would cope with that, but we'll see. So they were born last year. They're not even one yet. They really shouldn't be allowed alcohol. So we're forbidden. So what we are doing now is we are expressing our rules in code, and let me change this back to my actual date of birth because otherwise none of the other demos will work.
Mm-hmm.
I did that during the lab and it's like, why isn't nothing working? Oh, I forgot to change it back. So we go back to our requirement, and what we're doing is we are pulling out the date of birth claim, and then we are doing some calculations based upon it.
I see. So
this was the sort of thing that you used to do in your custom authorized attribute.
Mm-hmm. So here's the question. I get the requirement. Is it automatically pulling the handler for you? Because I didn't see where you specified it.
Because this is one class.
Yeah.
When we've set up the policy, it has injected the requirement into DI, and then, because it's the same class, it also knows it has the handler because one single class has been injected in. But we're going to come on to the bits where you need to start manually registering these things in the DI system. Because this is a simple example.
Right.
Things get a little more complicated in the real world.
Okay.
So, when you visit Microsoft and you go up to the reception desk, you can either swipe yourself into the building with your badge, or you're a visitor and the receptionist gives you a little visitor sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're anything like me, you forget your badge on a regular basis and you get a temporary sticker that is known as a badge of shame.
That's I've worn it.
And then they press a magic button and the doors open for you and you can go in. So let's think about, we have a building entry requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be fulfilled in three ways. You can have your badge. You can have the temporary badge of shame that has not expired.
Yeah.
Or you can have a visitor badge which has not expired and you are accompanied by another employee.
Got it.
Those are three ways to fulfill the same requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them depend on each other. It's not an and situation, it's an or. So we have a single requirement with multiple ways to fulfill it. So we have a single building entry requirement and multiple handlers.
I see. Okay.
And this is where we're getting back to the fact that if I don't know what to do, if I cannot fulfill a claim, I just return. Because other handlers for the requirement could fulfill the claim.
Oh, I see. And so in essence, you may have a N requirements.
Yes.
But only one of, if one of them says, oh, success, then all of the requirements are going to be met if it's in that policy.
It fulfills that. No. So a policy may have multiple requirements. Each requirement may have multiple handlers. So if one handler on a single requirement succeeds,
got it,
then that requirement succeeds, but other requirements
will
may
not
fail.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Okay,
and by fail you don't mean the catastrophic, you mean that it returns.
In our example, perhaps our you know, we would call context.fail if building dot is on fire equals true.
I guess you would just say if building dot is on fire.
Yeah, well, you probably have to specify the building number.
Oh,
at some
okay
point.
Yeah, got it. Okay. So just to reiterate, you have a requirement that has multiple handlers.
Yep.
If there's N minus one of them might just return, but if the nth one's like, yeah, good job, then that requirement's satisfied.
Has been fulfilled.
Got
yes.
it. Okay, good.
Okay, so we're going to sort of demonstrate this now. And we go back down to, oh, look, it's step six in the lab.
Nice.
So I'm going to create an office entry requirement. And this is where we're going to do things by splitting stuff up. Why are you still running? No idea. Solution Explorer. So I'm just going to have a requirement.
Okay.
Do you remember what our namespace is? Or our interface name is?
I authorization requirement? Is that right?
Let's find out, boys and girls.
Control dot. Yes.
Look at that. I'm not going to parameterize this in any way, shape, or form. This is just our requirement. Okay, because I'm going to assume we only have one office building and we don't want to do anything fancy.
Cool.
So that's fine. We have our requirement, but now I need to write handlers for it. So I'm going to write two. I'm not going to do all three. That's a bit
so ridiculous. Earlier when you said iAuthorization requirement was just a marker, you literally meant that there's nothing to implement.
There is nothing to implement. So I'm going to go add class has badge. Okay, now, do you remember what our handler was?
Yeah, it was something like I authorization handler of T.
It's just authorization handler. It's not an interface because we need to.
You have some base stuff. And that's going to be, you're going to be using the class that we just built.
And what was the class that we just built?
Office entry requirement?
Certainly was.
Boom.
Office entry requirement. So we need to implement.
Because that one does have stuff you need.
Yes.
Got it.
So we implement our handler. So this one basically will check whether someone has a badge. And I'm going to cut and paste this in. Assuming I can get cut and paste working. Oh. So this is going to look for a claim on the current user where the claim name is badge number. And we have a new check. We're now going to look at the issuer of that claim.
Interesting.
Because multiple companies have badges. You don't want someone from, well, Nintendo is just up the road. You don't want someone with a Nintendo badge just walking in, but they, you know, their identity provider probably also has a claim of badge number.
Right.
So now I want to go a little bit further and I want to take the badge number claim and look for it and then make sure that it's been issued by my company before the door opens.
Right.
So if the user doesn't have one, because this is what we're checking for first, I'm just going to give up. I don't know what to do with this, but other handlers may succeed. But if the user does have a badge number claim and it's been issued by me, I'm going to succeed. Now, really what we probably want to do in a better example is we want to check whether that badge is still valid.
Right.
So we would have a badge repo, and we would take the badge number and we would go off to that and say, is badge valid? Has this user been fired or not? And then we would also, we would branch, we would succeed if they haven't been fired.
I see. And that could be, you could either put it in here or even have a separate requirement.
You could, but I think it's nice it lives here because it's these are rules for a single requirement. And because we've separated stuff out with the handler, and the handler is going to get registered into the DI system, we can start injecting our databases, our services, whatever else we like.
Got it.
So we have a single handler that just looks to see if a user has a valid badge. And I'm going to add a has a temporary pass for people that forget.
I have been among those that have worn the badge of shame.
I think I do it about once every 3 months. There's a collection of them now that sits on what is nominally a LAN's monitor. There's about six of us have just all stuck our bits and pieces in there. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just cut and paste all of this. And this is, a bunch of made up code. So I'm going to look for a temporary badge expiry claim, which will be an expiry date for a temporary badge. I'm going to check that the temporary badge has been issued by me. And then I'm going to check that it hasn't expired. And if it hasn't expired, I will succeed my requirement. So I have a single requirement with two different ways to fulfill it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Okay. And I've just noticed that my code sucks. Because look, it's HTTPS here. And we'll do that. So in my account controller, I am going to now start adding test claims. Well, first of all, I kind of need to do my policy first.
Sure.
So I will go to startup. I will add a policy. And it's basically adding a new office entry requirement. But because I've separated the requirement out from the handlers, this won't work. I have to manually register the handlers into DI.
Got it.
So the way we do that, because DI is now baked in everywhere, we're going to go into Configure Services. And at the bottom of Configure Services, I'm just going to manually register them. I'm registering these as singletons because they have no dependencies and anything else, so it just cuts down memory. But you can add them as transient or request linked or whatever the heck else you like for the lifetime.
Yeah, and I mean, it just depends. Like, for example, if your requirement, if your requirement's taking a DB context,
you don't want a singleton. You most certainly do not. EF gets very upset.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you will know best what your lifetime should be. Sure. I'm just doing singleton because it's nice and easy. So now I will go back and I will apply building entry to my home controller. And this, of course, won't work because I have no claims yet. So I'm going to put the claims and I'm going to give myself a
badge.
I'm going to give myself a badge. Yep. Okay, so I've given myself a badge. And here we have a number of 123456, and it's got the issuer string, which we're going to check. Like I said in the previous segment, when you start doing this sort of thing, create a bunch of constants classes so you're not cutting and pasting magic strings everywhere. Public static class constants, and then const string name equals whatever. So then at least you can change them easily. Because every time I demo this, I usually try and type something wrong. So we will now discover if I've even cut and pasted something wrong. So I have a badge number requirement.
And theoretically, we should see Hello Barry.
We should see Hello Barry. And this is where I have my fingers crossed behind the screen. Oh, look at that.
Good. Very good.
So I've passed one handler for the requirement. That's all I needed to do.
Does it even run all of them? As soon as it gets a success, it's going to just do it.
No, it will run every single requirement will get evaluated and every single requirement handler will get evaluated because we're concerned about side effects. People may want to log inside their handlers. So it's like, I'm calling this with this user. So we run through every single one. Even if you've done the early exit stuff by calling context.fail, we're still going to run every single one just because, you know, there are people may want to code with side effects.
Sure.
Like logging or updating a, you know, tried, last tried timestamp or that sort of thing. So we will run every single one. So let's close this again. And we're going to remove our badge number claim. And I'm going to give myself a temporary badge of shame. So here we go. I am going to cut and paste because I suck. I have a temporary badge expiry. It's going to be now. It's going to expire in one day. I run it again. And hopefully we see Hello Barry.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Boom.
Hello Barry.
Got it.
So I have now fulfilled the second handler for a single requirement. So I've just fulfilled the same requirement but in a different way.
I see.
What will happen if I change add days to be minus one?
It should forbidden.
Forbidden. Because we've put the expiry check in there. We've now got a richer way of expressing stuff because we can write code inside our handler. So we've taken the badge expiry claim, we've turned it into a date, and now we check whether it's expired or not.
That's cool.
So hopefully with all of this, you do not need to write your own authorization attribute. This is what we'll be trying to replace.
Well, it feels like there is so many, I can't think of a situation that would fall outside of this particular implementation. I mean, maybe someone will come up with one. And if you do, please tell us.
Because we would like to know. I've been asking people for ages, does this fulfill all your requirements? And everybody nods. And if it doesn't, we kind of need to know. We need to know how much further you want to go with this. So in vNext, of course, then we can look at this again. So there's a little bit more to come along. And I'm gonna cheat a little bit. Rather than cut and paste this, it's a lot of code.
Right.
I am going to switch to a pre-prepared. Dum dum dum. Here is one I made earlier.
Mm-hmm.
All the British people in the audience will now be laughing because if they're my age, we had a television show called Blue Peter, which showed you how to construct things out of toilet roll handlers and sticky back plastic, and they would always come up with, and here's one I made earlier.
Okay. Here's one we made earlier.
So here's
folks.
One we made earlier. And what we're going to talk about is resource-based authorization. So at the minute, this is kind of okay.
Why don't you describe resource-based authorization? What is it?
So resource-based authorization is, well, when you try and access something, and I'm never very good at setting this, when you try and access something, you access a view for, say, a document, you're not really just authorization. You're not really just authorizing on the action, which is view. You're probably authorizing on the resource that the action is going to access. So you would load the document up. You would get a bunch of permissions in the document, and then you would evaluate the current identity against both the action and the actual document itself, the resource that you're trying to access. If we have, for example, an edit action, and on the edit action, basically the rules would state that a user can edit a document either if they're an administrator or they are the document owner.
Got it.
So once we have this and you are the document owner, well, now we're authorizing based on properties of the resource.
Okay.
So we have resource-based things. So here we have a simple document class, which has a document ID and an author.
Okay.
And we have a document edit handler, which basically is going to look to see if the resource's author is the current user. And you'll see that the way we declare this is slightly different. We now have an extra parameter on the authorization handler, which is basically the type of the resource that we are going to authorize on.
Oh, I see. So a resource could be any type of thing inside of your system.
Yeah. And then in handle, lo and behold, we don't just take the context and the requirement, we now take an instance of the resource.
Right.
And we're good. And then we have our simple check.
That's interesting, because now you, with any type of thing that you have in your system, you can actually do sort of an authorization check on if they have access to it.
Yep.
Okay.
So I have a fake documents repository. Oh, look at that. Has two documents. One written by me, one written by someone else. And we have a get. Now, the thing that ends up being slightly different here is that we can't specify this in an attribute anymore, because model binding happens way after attributes are evaluated. Mm-hmm. We have to move from a declarative model, which is the attribute, to an imperative model. And basically, because we have the magic of DI everywhere, all the authorization pieces are done in an iAuthorization service.
I see.
So we inject this into our controller and store it away, pretty much like we would do with anything else. And in our edit method, which is going to take an ID of a document, we get the document out of the repository. If it doesn't exist, we're going to return not found. And then I call authorizeAsync. I'm going to pass in the current user. I'm going to pass in the instance of the document that's come out of my repository and the requirement. In this case, it's an edit requirement.
I see. And that makes sense, because now the reason why you have to push it into the actual controller is because the controller needs to make a decision about a particular user's access to a thing.
Well, the controller doesn't make the decision. The authorization service does. But the controller has to load the resource.
Got it.
So if authorization has succeeded, this is where we actually have our true or false mm-hmm. that you were longing for earlier. Then we're going to return the view. If it doesn't, we'll return a challenge result, and that will convert a 401 to the login redirect or a 403 to the forbidden.
So a challenge result is literally you're running returning a 401.
No, challenge result is saying, you know, the way it works behind the scenes is it basically says this user can't authorize what they're trying to do. Please decide how you're going to treat it. And the middleware basically goes, oh, well, if they're not logged in, it becomes a 401. If they are logged in, but they're still not getting somewhere, well, then it must be a 403.
Yeah.
So that kind of happens behind the scenes. So that's pretty much it. Our document edit handler we've seen, our document repository we've seen, our edit requirement is just...
Yeah, it's a marker class.
It's a marker class. And if I hit run... Hopefully this runs, because this was the code from the lab.
And if it doesn't, then...
It's Seth's fault.
He takes pull requests.
Okay, so here we have it. So where was it? Document?
And then I think one.
There we go. So our document library, one is the one that I can get access to, because I'm logged in as Barry, as we saw. Look. Okay. Not cheating. Click document one. Author Barry. Document two. Oh, I am forbidden. So we're now authorizing not just on the user's identity, but on properties of the thing that the user is trying to access.
I see. And so, I mean, this literally, I think this, here's the thing. I've learned, because I learned about identity server, took a 2-day thing on it. Now that I've learned about policies, it feels like if you have someone dedicated to security, like these things can be written orthogonally. When you're writing the other content.
You plug it in and pull in your policies and away it goes.
And the other thing that's cool about it is with if you want to test these things, you can fake up claims identities and make sure that they don't work.
Fake up the resources, everything else. It's great. Well, you don't even need to, you fake up a principle and just put it into handle and see what happens.
And like even if these things, like a document, say it's like a million bytes long, you can use mock to just fake a document and make sure that it doesn't do the right thing.
That's These cool. are finally testable.
That's cool.
Yay.
That's cool. So what else you got, bud?
All right. So there are just there's one more thing really. And we'll give you the link to the lab and to all the lab code. And then there's an exercise at the end to make sure that you learned something, which we should probably make Seth do on video, because it would be really funny.
I should do it on video.
So you see that we have the iAuthorization service and we have DI everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of means that we can authorize based in views. And the reason that you want to do that is, well, if a user can't do something, there's no point in showing them links to that sort of thing.
Right.
So you want to basically edit your UI based upon this. Some people think this is a horrific idea, Some people think that you should set the rules as you're setting up your view model and pass them through. Other people like the idea of just running code in your views. I'm going to be agnostic about this and not choose what way is right, because that's just an argument I don't want to get involved with. Sure. It's like an argument of what is rest and what is.
Oh man, don't get me started on that.
So, in our views class, views can now take dependency injection.
Oh, interesting.
So, I'm just injecting it into here. There is a way to apply it to every single view, and that's part of Razor, and you can go to a bunch of Razor tutorials for that. So I am going to inject my authorization service into Razor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we go through, I'm going to call the authorization service just like I did in the controller code. I'm going to pass in the current user. I'm going to pass in an instance of the document because that's what we've passed in with our view model. And I'm going to pass in the requirement. So now what's going to happen is if I have access to the document, I'm going to see the edit link. So you can show or hide parts of your UI based on authorization decisions. Now, I want to make it perfectly clear, you should not just depend on hiding things in the UI. You still need to have the check in your controller methods, because otherwise someone's just going to type in
slash
the URL.
Two.
Yeah. So if I run this now, I should only see document number one.
Once we go to the front forward slash document.
Yes.
Perfect.
Perfect. So we can now use the same code in our controller code and in our view, and everything links together nicely in a unit testable way.
That's not, but here's the thing that's important. If you put forward slash two, you should get a forbidden.
So let's go to edit one. And because we've still got the code in the controller, if I'd taken the code out of the controller, I would have seen a document. So don't do that. Don't rely on just changing your UI as your sole method of authorization. You need to duplicate the checks.
And that was why I wanted you to type that. Just to,
because that's the sort of thing that Seth would do, frankly.
And I need to remember to do everything all the way down the pipe. Yep. Well, this is super interesting. So we looked at sort of advanced policies. We saw how to make our own requirements, add multiple handlers, one or many. And then we saw resource-based policies that allow you to look at the stuff that you're actually working on and check if people have access to those kinds of things.
Yep.
That's awesome. So let's get the link to the site up. Where's the GitHub repo?
Right, the GitHub repo is github.com/blowdart/ASP.NET Authorization Workshop.
So
there are other examples on my GitHub repo, some that are quite sarcastic, some that illustrate some of the weird things that you can do, but work your way through the authorization workshop first, and then there is an authorization samples repo where you can grab things from. Mm-hmm. And obviously on https://docs.asp.net, we documented all of this.
Fantastic. Well, this should be a good primer to get you started on thinking about how to manage security. You might have your own developer sort of work on this, and it could be an orthogonal thing. I love the way it's testable, and it feels much more flexible. Good job, guys.
Thank you very much. It wasn't me that did the work. I just gave them the requirements. It was all how.
That's why I said guys and gals.
Yes.
We're working on it.
But I tried to get Hal in front of the camera, and he's too shy.
Oh, goodness. Well, thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We've learned about how to do authorization in the new version of ASP.NET. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye.